Welcome to episode 96 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as Brent Cassino, rotating panel of guests, and myself, Ian Levesey, discuss whatever comes to mind, time after time, here on Comic Timing. What happens when you fall behind? You review eight books. Seriously, we're reviewing eight books. Sit down. Pull up a chair. It's going to be a while. Here now, Comic Timing.
Hey everybody, Brent here with, I'm just giving you what's up with Heroes Corner this month. They got some great specials, so be sure to go and check them out at heroescorner.com. But here are the CT picks, the Comic Timing picks, for this month, for books coming out in 2 months, which would be December, Christmas time. So, for DC, we've got JSA All-Stars with Freddie E. Williams and Matthew Sturgis, 75% off retail. Marvel, we have Secret Warriors number 11. 50% off retail at Heroes Corner. And Dark Horse, we got Conan the Cimmerian, The Weight of the Crown, featuring art by Derek Robertson, 50% off retail. So be sure you pick these up because Ian and I will be doing Review Corner on these three, as well as some other books, just depending on around the time, because this episode we got it jam-packed with eight books. So be sure and check out heroescorner.com. Don't forget to use the special promo code CTROCKS, C-T-R-O-C-K-S, as Ian likes to call it, to get an extra 5% off of your first order from Heroes Corner. So if you're a new customer to Heroes Corner, be sure and put that code in. You know, get an extra 5% off. It'll really help you out if you're going overboard or something like that this month. So be sure and check them out. They've also got a new and improved trade system. So I think if you make an order with just a couple of trades or something like that, it'll come within 2 weeks. Or I don't want to make any promises, but it's a reasonably decent time. Just give them time to order it from Diamond, and they'll ship it right out to you as it comes in. You don't have to wait until December to get trades that you order in October. I asked them that specifically, and they said, yeah, that's going on. So be sure to check them out for that, as well as new trades. They got great specials on that, as well as statues and busts, toys, video games. I don't know if they have video games. DVDs, books, T-shirts. Check them out. They're a great site. We love them. They help us support, and they help you bring Comic Timing to you guys, and they also help you guys by giving you great discounts like stuff like this, and as well as some other listener picks that they got going on over there. So be sure and check them out.
Hey there, folks. My name's Ian Levesey, and welcome to episode 96 of Comic Timing. Well, we've managed to get two episodes out in a month, which is better than the past couple of months, and now we're going to have a really long episode to celebrate that, probably, because we're going to review the hell out of these eight books that we have here, and joined, as always, by the co-host, who is enjoying a couple of days off. Lucky him. Brent Cassino. What's going on, Brent?
What's going on, Ian?
Not much. What happened? Did work get sick of you?
No. I had a thing to attend in North Carolina, so I took Friday off. We drove up there, enjoyed the weekend, and then drove back late on Sunday. So got back like 3:30 in the morning down here in Florida. And I decided ahead of time, of course, that I should probably take Monday off to sleep and do laundry and stuff. So had a nice relaxing day. Managed to get the episode out. You're welcome. Sorry it took so long.
It's okay. Thank you. Thank you very much, Brent, for a wonderful job, I must say. It was absolutely splendid to not have to do the work.
I know. You must really like it.
Yeah, I've been a lazy ass lately. What can I say?
Yeah.
Oh,
so basically, we have 2 hours to do eight books, so that's an average of 15 minutes per book.
Oh, yeah, that's totally going to happen. All right, well...
if we can manage to stay on topic, right?
Well, yeah, right. We'll see what we can do here. We'll see what we can do. All right. Well, what were you doing in North Carolina?
Had a wedding to attend.
Ah, very nice, very nice. Family or friend?
Friend.
Oh, cool. So you're getting to that age, huh?
Yeah, sooner than we think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm already at that age myself, and I'm like, yeah, great, yeah. You enjoy getting married. Oh, isn't that nice? Yeah, I don't know anybody here. I'm just gonna smile and laugh. Okay. All right, so it's a review corner. We got eight different issues to review here. That would be
eight episodes at a time.
One by one, man. It sure as hell is going to feel like that.
We're going to get to 100 fast.
By the time we're done, we'll be on 104. Booyah. We got Death Clock versus the Goon. We got Doom Patrol number 1. Days Missing number 1. Justice League Cry for Justice number 1, which says just how behind we are. Although, actually,
Avengers is old too.
Yeah, New Avengers is old. Ironic there. New Avengers is old.
Everything else is recent.
Yeah, Fantastic Four is in there, and Batman and Robin number 4. And
that's really weird that we're like 3 months behind on some of these books, mm-hmm. and like no months behind on some of these other ones.
Yeah, isn't that weird? Like, well, Fantastic Four number the second issue of his run just came out this week. Last week, or if not last week.
And I think Doom Patrol 2 just came out as well.
Yeah. Yeah, so we're not too far behind on that stuff. However, Justice League Cry for Justice, the reasoning behind that... See, when I got the San Diego Comic-Con, I was like, oh, that's odd. I don't have Justice League Cry for Justice number one. I thought I had that, and I could have sworn I saw it in my shipment. And then I realized it was in the damaged portion of Heroes Corner site. So I never actually received that issue until a couple of weeks ago. Of course, I read it because I bought it out in San Diego thinking that I had lost it. But then I got the actual issue that I was going to get actually back in the mail as of like 2 weeks ago with my shipment with Kim, which came with like Wackest Night Superman and stuff like that. So I technically only got that issue 2 weeks ago.
Wow. Mm-hmm. And you have two and three?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I've read all three of them. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm still waiting on Uncanny X-Men Exodus.
Oh, yeah.
It didn't come on the last one. It said look damaged or... short shifted. I don't know what it was.
I think it was short shifted because
Well,
for me though, I think it was actually Blackest Night Superman number one was one shipment behind because they got a whole bunch of damaged issues that they had to bring back. Thanks, Diamond.
Yeah, you're the best, Diamond. Thanks. Yeah.
All right. Well, how about we start off with Justice League Cry for Justice number one? Since that's the oldest one in the pile.
I was just about to say that.
All right. Well, this one is written by James Robinson with art by I know I'm going to butcher this.
Mauro Cassioli.
Thank you, Mauro Cassioli. All right, and it's got a painted style to the art. He's the guy who filled in for
Howard Porter on Trials of Shazam.
Yes.
A very underrated series, I must say.
Yeah, well, that's because it took like 2 years to come out. I mean, with good reason, because Howard Porter got nerve damage in his hand and basically had to relearn how to draw. So,
Also part of that was he wasn't doing the stuff he's doing on Magog or Titans recently. He was doing a digitally painted style, not just like what we're seeing here.
Pretty similar to it.
But similar. He was doing it all on the computer. Mm-hmm. So that took some time to learn as well.
Right.
So, right. I didn't mind waiting. It was kind of removed from continuity and everything.
Yeah, and Cassioli actually did a decent job of filling in. I mean, I really didn't notice that much of a change in the art style between Porter and him.
But other than the totally different art styles, but no, he did a really good job of telling the story. I think part of that might have been Judd Winnick as well. So
yeah, but here we are with Cry for Justice, and actually one of the characters that was in that series winds up in this one at one point. But that's actually later on. That's actually technically issue two. So I'll talk about issue one first. Initial impressions on Justice League Cry for Justice number one.
Initial impressions for Justice League Cry for Justice can be described for me as, I was not that impressed with this issue.
Wow.
I think that was the resounding experience everyone across the internet had.
To be completely honest, I think that quote, that pull quote needs to be on issue four. Justice League Cry for Justice. Brett Cassino, Comic Timing.
Well, two was a little bit of an improvement. Three was a little bit better.
Mm-hmm.
But this one, I bought it and kind of went, this is how it starts?
Yeah.
People yelling out, I want justice?
Right. Well, and that's kind of what I got from it. It's like, okay, blah, 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 I want justice. Blah, 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 I want justice. Page, 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 justice, justice, justice. I'm like, okay, James Robinson, I get the point. These people want justice. Hey, maybe they should start a Justice League and they should be crying about justice. Which is exactly what they've been doing all damn series long since then. But like you, I liked issue two better, and I liked issue three even more than that. Mostly because I'm just happy to see Proteus back to be a kick-ass villain again.
Prometheus. Proteus is X-Men.
Damn it, I'm so off. Prometheus back as a kick-ass villain, considering that Grant Morrison got him that way, and then everybody else after him sort of like really dummied him down. So it's fun to see.
What did you think about the opening scene with Hal Jordan? I mean, that was in the back of so many issues. I kind of just, almost read it again for like the 16th time, felt like.
It
lost everything that it was supposed to have.
Yeah. And that's why I'm not that big a fan of the previews in the back of the books, to be honest. I mean, if you're going to buy a book, you're going to buy it. Your opinion's really not going to be swayed by five pages in the back of every other DC book. For an entire month,
Because after this book and that preview being in there, and I read it like online, and then I think I read it in the back of a book, I finally stopped reading all those previews in the actual back of books. Just like, you know, this is not going to help my reading.
Yeah, same here. I mean, the only one I actually read, because I'm waiting for trade on it, was the Superman origin. Because
oh, are you?
Yeah. Well, that one, I figure it's Geoff Johns. It's an origin story. So obviously you can wait until the end, because I think I know how Superman became Superman. I don't need to read that as it's coming out. You know, it's not going to be that big of a surprise to me. But anyway, art style. I mean, look, the art style of this, I think it's very pretty, but it's very stagnant as well. I'm not quite thrilled with the action scenes. They don't feel like they're moving.
I can see where you get that. But I think the one page in this issue that's really stood out to me is the opening page with the Adams. You know, mm-hmm. You have like the panel usage is very different on just that one page, and I thought that really displayed, you know, his strength as an artist. You know, what he has and what he can do at different times, right. But I think that was the only page where he really got to stretch himself, and everything else is just so normal that he's not able to make these renderings come to life. And I think there's some similar complaints with Alex Ross. You know, mm-hmm. He's a lot of his stuff feels very static because it's so rendered, and only in, you know, and Alex Ross as well recently got a chance to do some weird panel layouts and stuff. I don't know if it was Justice or that Superman issue he did, but then it didn't feel so static as when he was confined to like a grid or something like that.
It was definitely the Kingdom Come Superman that did that, because I remember actually really enjoying the whole Alex Ross penciling something for once, mm-hmm. as opposed to using his usual painted style. But my only problem with the scene you're talking about in this is Ryan Shuri doesn't look very Asian.
Well, I also have a problem with Green Arrow wearing his old classic costume when I very much prefer the hooded one he's in now in his current book.
Yeah, what is up with that?
So I can't figure that out.
It could be because this series was started so long ago.
Well, how long ago is it? I mean, Firestorm in that one panel, teeny tiny panel he's in, almost looks like Ronnie Raymond and not Jason Rush.
It's definitely Jason Rush, but that might have just been an error in the way he was drawn, quite frankly. But with this, though, I mean, we've been hearing about James Robinson's Justice League forever, it feels like. I mean, this thing was first solicited as happening, not the actual solicitation for the issue, about a year and a half ago. And at that point, it was an ongoing, then it became a miniseries, and now James Robinson's going to be writing the regular Justice League series, so I guess continuing the story that probably would have been continued in Cry for Justice in the first place. Mm-hmm. So this first issue could have very well have been started a year and a half ago when they thought it was going to be an ongoing.
I think it was. You know, and I didn't really see Mauro Cassioli being the ongoing artist. Because as he's very good, obviously you can tell here he's pouring a lot into it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, well, and they even said they didn't want to solicit the first issue until they knew they had at least like four or five issues in a can, just to ensure that Cassioli didn't fall behind on this thing.
Yeah, and I'm very glad they're doing that. Even though Superman is not really around anymore, neither is Batman, that's kind of reflected in the first issue, but they did a good job of, you know, maybe adding in a few extra pages or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, if they had to redo anything, it did a pretty good job of kind of keeping in with current continuity.
Mm-hmm. Now, are you familiar with McCall or Congorilla?
Not at all, which is making me appreciate what James Robinson's doing in the back of his book, his little, like, asides, you know, to the reader and talking about old comics he loves, and it's, you know, I got the origin of Congorilla as two pages in the back here. I thought it was great. I was like, you know, that really helps me understand who this guy is and what he's all about.
Yeah, I wasn't familiar with Congorilla either. I was, however, familiar with McCall from the bits of the Starman Omnibus that I've read so far. But this is a character that has been one of James Robinson's favorites ever since he really started playing with him back in the Starman days, and if he's not going to bring back Jack Knight, it's at least nice to see McCall back in the, I guess, in the main DC universe. Because, well, to be completely honest, I don't think we're ever going to see Jack Knight back unless we see that one story that James Robinson never told, which is supposed to be happening, you know, during Starman's run that we've never really seen before. So it's fun to see him going back into the sandbox. However, the scenes, it wasn't in this issue, but it was in the next issue with the Shade and the rest of the Opal City guys.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of felt a little bit of force, a little bit forced to me. And I think it's like it didn't really call for any of the Opal City people to appear, because the Shade is going to run a message to the Justice League. The Shade is going to run a message to the Justice League. A guy who's fought the Justice League so many times, why would they trust him? You know? I mean, I'm sure he's been a good guy at times, but that's not exactly the route that I would have taken with that. I mean, agree or disagree?
I didn't read Starman, so...
Well, okay, but you do...
Agree to disagree.
Well, you do
understand.
You do know, yeah, who the Shade is, right?
Not really, no.
Okay, all right. Well, the Shade... I guess the best way to describe him is he's sort of an anti-hero at times and a villain at others. Mm-hmm. And basically, it's like whatever the hell the mood sets him, that's what he's going to do. Like, sometimes he's fought the Justice League, other times he's helped them. Sometimes he's fought Starman, other times he's helped them. So you don't want to send a shady guy like that, no pun intended, okay, pun intended, after the Justice League, you know, to send a message. That's all I'm saying, mm-hmm, you know? And... Go ahead.
Well, I was just looking at I was surprised they killed, well, not really surprised they killed Buona Beast. I didn't really miss him at all, but
yeah.
I don't know why, but all of a sudden I'm just focused on the little aside in the back of the book, and you know, just seeing Mauro Casioli's pencils and stuff. It's like you realize how much he can put in pencils, and then like on the page with the atoms and stuff, how much he puts in digitally.
Oh yeah.
So, you know, he's got skill everywhere it counts, basically, and that's really impressive.
Oh yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. He tells a story, and I mean that's good to see out of any artist. It's just that when you're used to seeing traditional superhero art, and you switch to a painted style for something like Justice League, it can take some getting used to.
Right.
You know.
I think this we can sum up this issue and probably this series as it was meant to be an ongoing.
Oh yeah.
You know, it was meant to be bigger than it is, and I don't think at the end of the six issues we're really, or seven. Seven issues?
I believe it's seven, yes. It's, wow. It says right here on the first on the cover, first issue.
Yeah,
seven.
I just saw that and I thought it was six. I don't really believe that at the end of the seven issues we're gonna be that satisfied with it.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it'll continue into James Robinson's run on Justice League.
Yeah.
Maybe after the first story arc he does there, because I think that's out already. Or it's coming out.
It's coming out soon, which confuses me a little bit, because some of these characters are going to be in his Justice League, and yet Cry for Justice isn't going to be done until about 3 months into his run.
Yeah.
Which, I don't know, it's a little bit of a weird overlap there. I mean, I understand why they needed to do it, because they wanted to have like a regular Justice League book going on, and Dwayne McDuffie, you know, got fired months ago. They've sort of been stalling ever since.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm curious to see exactly how they're gonna, you know, move people over into the book.
Mm. So what would you give this issue then?
I'd give it a solid 3 out of 5. I mean, it's a story builder. Not much really went on. I mean, the Atom scenes were fun, and you know, Kangorilla seems like an interesting character to me. Macaw, I knew already. Hal and Ollie, or Hal and Ollie. What else is new? So you know, it made me want to read more. I mean, to be completely honest with you, I did not order anything past issue one.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been picking it up in the store because of that, because I was so interested in what was going on, and I heard that James Robinson was going to be taking over regular Justice League, that I figured, all right, fine, I won't wait on it after all. I'll pick it up in the store. And that's what I've been doing. So it got me interested enough to continue with the series. So I guess that's a good sign. So yeah,
I think that may be the deal with most people, that because he's going to be on Justice League and this is supposed to play into it and have major ramifications, that they will continue to pick it up solely for that fact, not because it merits picking it up on its own based on the first issue.
Well, okay, but do you feel it has merit after reading 2 and 3?
After reading 2 and 3, yeah.
All right, okay.
I'm sticking with it. But I would give the first issue a 2.
Okay. No, that's fine.
And, you know, and like one of the and a half for those stars really belonged to art for me, because the story would just kind of felt so just kind of cobbled together in this first issue that really didn't get a sense of where this meeting was going,
mm-hmm,
until the second issue.
Well, it's odd for me to state it this way, but the text piece in the back, when I noticed just how much passion James Robinson had for these particular characters and for the Justice League and for DC Comics and for comics in general, kind of made me like the issue better. You know, like there's a difference between a guy who's had like his entire life set on doing this one job versus someone that you know is just like phoning it in. And I don't believe that that's happening here with Justice League Cry for Justice. This is a guy who wanted to tell this story for years from the looks of it, and is finally getting a chance to do that.
Well, I'm just hoping that James Robinson can show me that, you know, that he deserves the respect he's given because of his Starman stuff. Because I have not read Starman. I have read Golden Age, and that was fantastic.
As did I.
But any of the stuff he's come out with since then, you know, since his comeback, basically, has not impressed me. His Superman stuff was all right. You know, the Atlas arc was okay. He's doing a good job in World of New Krypton. I'm enjoying those issues.
Did you read the second Jimmy Olsen special yet?
I've read the third one, yeah, whatever it was. Those are great.
Yeah,
that was shocking. Those, he's really shown me the strength as a writer. But, you know, and his Batman 1 year later stuff, I like that one.
Yeah.
And a lot of people seem to not like it for some reason.
What?
But
why? Are you kidding me?
Or at least the CGS guys kind of just poo-poo the whole 1 year later thing. And I thought the Batman and Superman stories were excellent.
Same here, yeah.
So I guess to each his own. I guess I'm just basing everybody on them. But
There are guys who are solid against this series. I mean, I can understand their reasonings behind it. Like, there were the opening lines to the second issue kind of insulted me a little bit with the whole threesome between...
I thought that was funny.
Well, it was funny, but...
It was funny, but it didn't seem necessary. I see where you're going.
Yeah,
you're
it didn't seem in character either.
No.
I mean, after the like growing up that Huntress has done in Birds of Prey and stuff like that, I wouldn't have necessarily seen that happening. But whatever,
they necessarily didn't say it happened yesterday.
Well, yeah, I get that, but you know, still, it's like I saw the character one way, and then I see this, I'm like, eh, what the hell? But there are some people that actually took like full offense to that, and I'm like, come on, man, get over it. It's a comic book.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, but all right. So it's good. It's there. Before we move on to the next issue, have you seen the lineup for James Robinson's Justice League yet? The full lineup.
Yeah, and it's very interesting.
Okay, well let's talk about that real quick here about the Justice League of Titans. That's basically what they are, dude. Justice League of Titans.
Yeah, Donna Troy. Yeah. Cyborg.
Starfire.
Was that the Batman? Oh, that was in the Blackest Right.
Yeah, it's Batman, Dick Grayson. So Nightwing's in there. Bam. Cyborg.
Mon-El.
Starfire.
Mm-hmm.
Donna Troy, as you said, Kangorilla, Hal, and Ollie. Adam. Am I forgetting anybody else, or is that it?
No, that's it. You're absolutely right.
All right. So, yeah, I mean, it's nice to see these guys, you know, stepping up to the next level, but at the same time, I'm thinking, like, are they ready yet?
I guess we'll find out.
I certainly do. I certainly do, yes. Well, and if the series is actually good, well, I guess we'll see. But yeah, but I've actually heard some people compare this specific lineup to stuff like Justice League International, and I'm like, I wouldn't go that far, dude.
I don't think any of those characters are humorous, but I don't know. We'll find out. Let's go to New Avengers.
Yeah, sure.
55. It's the start of a new arc, basically, even though it kind of feels like the same arc that's been going on since before Secret Invasion, and I'll get to that later. But basically, we picked this issue because Stuart Immonen was jumping on as the regular artist.
Yeah.
So since that's why we picked this issue, what did you think of the art starting off with?
Well, I've always been a fan of Immonen's art, and I continue to be a fan of him here. He uses a different style than what he used in Ultimate Spider-Man, a little bit of a similar style to his next wave stuff in certain aspects, but he is like forever the art chameleon, as in he can shape his art to whatever book he's on.
Well, it just as this issue came out, I think in the same shipment, I had that the end issue of Miller Hitch run on Fantastic Four.
Yep,
and he did all of that issue, and it looked similar to Hitch's stuff.
Oh yeah,
and then you read this, and it's like regular Immonen's like. Jesus, this guy has got chops.
Oh, hell yeah. And what's great about this issue, too, is that, and again, I'm talking to the art here, is that he might have even picked up a couple of Lionel Francis Yu's influence on New Avengers here, because...
Yeah, it's a lot more textured and liney and stuff than what his normal stuff.
Yeah, and that's not to say that that's a bad thing. I think that it fits the series very well, and it sort of gives it a consistent flow,
yeah,
which I'm happy to see.
I love the art. No complaints about the art, but the story for me, it's like, come on already. I'm so tired of the Hood and his gang that I want them just to be done with it or move on to something else. Why did we have three continuous arcs, basically? We had before Secret Invasion, we had the post-Secret Invasion with the Hood and the Dark Reign stuff, and now we got this, and it's like, I'm so tired of it. I want Bendis to do something else.
Yeah, and isn't this like the third time we've seen the Wrecking Crew in like 3 months?
Yeah. Well, they're so involved with the Hood that, you know, they're almost practically in every issue.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'll focus more on the conversation that Spider-Man had with Jessica in this. I think that was probably the best part of the entire damn issue.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, if you just took that out, if you were to have this be the entire issue, I would have been okay.
The subsequent issues have gotten a little more interesting. Mm-hmm. 56 and 57. I have not read the one with Luke Cage and the heart monitor or anything like yet. But
neither have I. Yeah.
I mean, they're good, solid issues. It's just I'm just so tired of the Hood in New Avengers.
Yeah. Well,
I'm so tired of the Hood period because he's been so prominent in the New Avengers.
Well, this issue is not very Hood centric, though. This is just Hood's gang.
Well, Hood's gang, Hood. I'm grouping them all into one thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, to be honest, they haven't really even fought the Dark Avengers yet.
Not really. No, not in their own book.
So, that's where my dislike for this is coming from. I'm just really tired of Bendis sticking to the same group of villains. It's like I thought they got together to stop the Initiative. Mm-hmm. I thought they got together the second time to stop Norman Osborn. Mm-hmm. And we got Clint going after him in Dark Reign the List rather than in the pages of his own book.
Yeah, that's a bit odd. Well, however, there is something incredibly disturbing about watching Clint Barton puke his guts out.
I'm trying to find that page. I haven't read this in so long.
last page, the to be continued page. You know, Bobby, get out of here. Go get...
through his mask at the same time.
I know.
That's a lot of puke.
Tell me about it. And Luke Cage, I mean, he must be getting on in years, man. I mean, his heart's just going to go any minute.
Yeah, any minute now.
Yeah, it's cool that even the villains were, like, shocked that their plan actually worked.
Yeah, it worked. These never work.
Yeah, I know.
We're expecting to get our asses kicked.
Like, how about that? It worked. God damn. And yeah, I mean, so all of their powers are neutralized, and we're basically left with Mockingbird as the, like, savior. And it's nice to see her in her current outfit, by the way.
Okay? Yeah.
Because it was a pain in the ass where they had New Avengers The Reunion, they had her in one outfit in that, and she's still wearing her old outfit in regular New Avengers, and like everywhere else she's showing up. And I'm like, make up your damn mind. Because this new outfit's a hell of a lot nicer, I must say. No thong.
I'm having a hard time reading Spider-Woman, though, in New Avengers, because I'm so used to her being – she was Spider-Woman for the longest time, and then she was the Skrull Queen, and now she's back to being regular Spider-Woman, and it's just – it's jarring. You know what I mean?
I can understand where you're coming from. No. I understand where you're coming from with that. She's
been a villain for so long that you're supposed to throw out all the things she did previously. And I'm just remembering the Lena Francis Yu issues where she took the body of the Skrull and all this other stuff. And then now it's a totally different character, basically.
Yeah. It's not even almost. It is a totally different character because that character.
Well, I mean, the old Spider-Woman was written to be Spider-Woman, but Spider-Woman hadn't been prominence at all, so it's kind of like I'm just confused as how to characterize Spider-Woman.
Well, what you would characterize her as right now is the same thing you would characterize Mockingbird as in somebody who's, you know, been away and now has to sort of like reclaim her life that was taken away from the Skrulls. And their way of going about it, I mean, obviously, if you read did you read New Avengers The Reunion?
No, I did not.
Okay, all right, because in that Mockingbird's basically going through PTSD. I mean, she's got post-traumatic stress disorder from being with the Skrulls, and she keeps like getting these like random flashes and stuff like that. I'm sure Spider-Woman is probably going through the same thing because they were plucked away from their life, and now they got to try and figure out where the hell they even fit in the current world. You know?
Why can't we have some issues of that in New Avengers rather than the Hood and his gang?
Because Spider-Woman has her own series now.
I'm watching the motion comic. I'm not buying the book.
Oh, yeah? Wow.
I'm saving myself a few dollars, huh. I think.
I guess not.
Because I think they split each issue of the comic book in half.
Oh, great.
So, I don't know. It's worth it. It's really good, though.
I have the first one of those because it was available for free for a while. Yeah. But I haven't actually watched it yet, so I'll have to go ahead and do that. But,
yeah, give it a shot.
All right, cool. Yeah, I mean, if I like it enough, I'll probably get it. Or hell, if it's available on DVD, eventually I'll probably just pick up the DVD like they did with Watchmen.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, I mean, overall, good issue. I'm happy to see Stuart Immonen on it. I'm happy to see him on it for the long haul because, like Mark Bagley, Stuart Immonen does not put out a book late.
Yeah, he does not. That's what I'm excited because we had and even when Francis Yu was on it, there were no late issues. And that's something that's kind of plagued the series as it got started. You know, you had Finch on there. He was kind of a slow artist. And we had McNiven, and it took a little while. And then, you know, we had the Civil War issues, which are all different artists. So that was a slate of things. And
And let's not forget Mighty Avengers and Frank Cho.
Yeah, that was just a train wreck. So,
So yeah, I'm happy with it. This was a sort of a dull issue, but whatever. I'll give it a 3 out of 5 still.
Yeah, I'll give it a 2.5.
All right, that's fine. I mean, and plus, you've liked the subsequent issues, so there you go.
Yeah.
All right. So, moving on from there, and this will be available in trade soon enough, because we're that far behind. All right.
We're going next, boss.
All right, here we go. Let's roll Death Clock versus the Goon.
All right.
This was a $3.50 one-shot by Dark Horse Comics. Written by Eric Powell with assists by Brendan Small. The art was also done by Eric Powell. For those of you who've read The Goon before, it's a really kooky horror book that Dark Horse has been putting out for years now. Eric Powell, obviously the creator, and there's going to be an animated movie of it at some point. And Metalocalypse, Deathclop, obviously, are from that. Metalocalypse is a Adult Swim series with Brendan Small, who did home movies before that. And they're this killer rock band who basically the entire world worships, and wherever the hell they go, anarchy ensues. But Brent, you've never watched Metalocalypse before. I don't know if you've read The Goon before.
No, neither.
Okay, all right. So what did you think of Death Clock versus The Goon?
I thought it was cute.
All right, so of all the words you choose to say about this book, you choose cute?
Cute. I mean, it was amusing. It was fun. It, you know, made me want to read The Goon more than it did to watch Metalocalypse, so...
This comic's funnies book, Sam's, has no constitutities with any other comic's funnies books or them's cartoons, television shows. You jack-offs, fanboys, dildos.
That was funny.
Well, I adore the different art styles. You know,
I can see that. Yeah. I enjoyed The Goon art style much more.
Well, yeah, because that's obviously more detailed and... really, really shows more. I mean, he chose to emulate the style of the actual series pretty well. Yeah,
I understood that, so it was okay.
My name's Dr. Roxo, and I do cocaine. Yeah, Dr. Roxo is a villain in this. If you watch the series, you'll probably get it a little bit more. But basically, just think clown that loves cocaine who has been brainwashed to murder.
I got that. Yeah.
All right.
Totally got that.
Good. So, you want to read The Goon now?
Yeah, maybe. You know, it didn't really latch me on to both anything, though. But if I had to pick one, I'd say The Goon, I guess.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, what's good about this is exactly what that first page sort of tries to say in the broken English that it presents. That, you know, it's not in continuity. It's just a funny romp into both universes. And really, you can come away from it just happy that you read a book.
I want to know why they can say dildos in the front, but they, you know, blur out the cuss words in this.
That's actually a running gag just for Metalocalypse, because whenever they curse, they usually use like a giant guitar noise.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Otherwise, they would have been cursing their head off. I mean, there have been plenty of curses in The Goon before.
Okay.
Yeah. So, were you like weirded out by anything? I mean, did you not understand anything because you didn't know any series or?
It wasn't. I was entertained. I really thought I was. I was hesitant about this, basically.
Okay.
And then as soon as I opened it up and it was all Metalocalypse for pages and pages and the art style was flat and I understood why it was doing it, but I was still hesitant. Mm-hmm. And then once we got into it and they got transported into the goons world, especially by the, you know, the scene in the bar with everybody, then I started to really enjoy myself.
All right. Okay, that's cool. See, for a guy like me who actually knows Metalocalypse, and I've read volume one of The Goon, but I've never read anything farther than that, because I think CGS did it as a book of the month back in the day, and I wound up getting that. What was really great about the art style of this front of Metalocalypse parts was that, as somebody who's watched the show, I could hear their voices in my head, you know, as I was reading it, which is great for somebody who's watched the show. Not necessarily as great for somebody who hasn't, but still, it's something that you can successfully say you have. You know, like when I read a Buffy book, I don't always imagine the voices of the characters in my head. Or you know, if I read a Futurama book, sometimes I won't exactly hear the voices in my head. But this captured, I think, the essence of the Metalocalypse characters, and I was basically watching it unfold in my head. If that makes any sense.
Mm-hmm.
So I was happy.
Yeah, I really like the end concert scene. You know, I could just picture it because I listened to a little bit of their first album or something. Uh-huh. I think their second Death album came out today.
Really?
Oh, but, shit. But yeah, so it's actually – I listened to a little bit of that. So I can just kind of – I heard the music as they're playing at the end. After we mix our blood with poison, lick the ink from your fingers and embrace your death. Death by darkness.
Yeah, it's pretty hunky.
I enjoyed that, so.
You know what I enjoy?
I want dumplings!
Murder face at the end there.
Right.
Yeah. Just overall, it was a fun book. I mean, there's really not much you can say about this other than if you haven't read it, why haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sure it's 350, but it's a well-produced comic book out of Dark Horse that you can just read and then put aside afterwards and just be happy that you read a good book.
Yeah, I'd give it a 3.
I'm giving this one a solid 4.
Okay.
Yeah, the first one I've given higher than a 3 so far, so I guess that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. I guess the thing with me about the art with the Metalocalypse guys is that the cover, you know, Eric Powell does the cover, and that is a little – looks more like the Goon than it does the flat Metalocalypse stuff. So.
Right. Yeah, well, I mean, there were alternate covers to this, so I don't know what the other one was like.
Oh, I have the one that's like blood red.
Yeah, so do I.
Okay. Yeah.
I mean, it says on the inside that there was at least one alternate cover, but yeah. Either way, he probably rendered it like that because, well, to be completely honest, it presents a nicer cover than it would if everything was flat.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And this comic came in a My Light 2 bag, 50 cents each from Heroes Corner.
Ooh, very nice.
They actually took my idea seriously about offering a sample pack. So if you're new to Heroes Corner and you're wondering what all these My Light options are, definitely give them an email and ask them to send you a sample for each of them, and I'm sure they will if you're a new customer and haven't gotten it already.
Oh, dude,
so
they sent mine in Blackest Night number 1, the Green Lantern issue that was subsequent to that, and the first Blackest Night Presents or whatever it was.
Right, Tales of the Core.
Yeah, Tales of the Core, thank you. Yeah.
Yeah. So I really like that sample pack. I'm not going to get anything because I thought they were all real too loud, but I really liked kind of being able to touch and feel the difference between everything.
Yeah,
so.
It's nice to be able to sample things. I mean, it's not anything that I'm going to do myself right now because they all just go into long boxes, but if I ever like come across a book that I feel I really want to have in something great like that, I might request one here and there and, you know, maybe throw in an extra 10 cents or whatever it takes to get that one because, you know, if it's worth it sometimes to make something be pretty.
Mm-hmm.
I like to be pretty sometimes.
I feel pretty, oh, so pretty.
What have I done? Oh, shit.
All right, let's move on to Fantastic Four.
Fantastic Four.
Settle the score. Okay. Jack Kirby versus Disney.
Oh, dude, yeah, okay, what the hell?
Bullshit. That was such bullshit.
Well, did you hear that apparently Steve Ditko is starting up a blog because that's in retaliation to the Kirby family claiming that he has rights to Spider-Man?
I'm just like, you know, I know Kirby's been dead for a little while, but I mean, come on. You know, as soon as this happens, it's just, it reeks of money grubbing, and it's not about creator rights at all. It's about money.
Yeah, no, basically they saw
all this stuff is about money. If it was an actual creator that's still alive doing this, then I'd be like, yeah, it's about creator rights. But the wife and kids had nothing to do with the creation. Therefore, I don't see how they should be able to be entitled to any of the money that's, you know, been created off of it because that person's dead. I mean, people may disagree with me and go, oh, their family's entitled to money they could have made at the time. But, you know, they all signed contracts.
Yes.
Is the end of the story for me is that you signed a contract and God for, you know, nobody had the foresight or idea that it would become this big. And if you didn't, you know, adjust it then and say that you owe me some money, then, you know, you can't you can't blame the company for not paying you.
You shouldn't be able to, after the fact, change that you signed a contract, you know, or that your grandfather signed a contract or something like that. Jack Kirby signed away what he signed away, and he seemed pretty happy with his life. So you know what? Get on with yours and be happy that your grandfather's legacy lives on in the.
You will be known in 2,000 stores around the country forevermore.
Hell yeah! Hell yeah!
If you show up and shop there, you know?
No question.
Oh, Kirby. Any relation? Yeah, my grandfather. Oh, cool, man. Here, take these for free. You know? Come on. Give me a fucking break.
And they're only doing this because of the Schuster shit.
I'm sure. I'm sure.
Otherwise they would have done it 5 years ago, 10 years ago.
I'm sure if the Schusters had not won back half of Action Comics or whatever the decision was, and I know it's still in litigation, but this would not be coming back. I just hope that Bob Kane's wife doesn't come back and do this.
I
think she's gotten paid enough times for those Batman DVDs that she should be well off.
Oh, by the way, Raph wants the rights to Darkhawk.
He can keep his Darkhawk and publish it through Vivid Comics, so I won't read it.
Oh, shit. Well, that's just cold.
All right, so Fantastic Four.
Yes.
Jonathan Hickman, Dale Eaglesham, brand new team. And at first, I heard about this book on 11 O'Clock Comics, and they were reviewing it.
Mm-hmm.
And Vince B. said, you need to read Dark Reign Fantastic Four. And I went, oh, shit, because I didn't buy that.
Yeah.
And then I was hoping that there wouldn't be too much with it in the issue. And then I read it, and I was pleasantly surprised that there really wasn't.
Yeah. Really, they tell you everything that you need to know on that first page. Not even the first page of the comic, but in the previously page. You know, that picture you see of Reed Richards waving his hand at the machine, that's kind of all you need to know.
Okay, cool.
Right there.
Did you read Dark Reign Fantastic Four?
I did, yeah.
I remember you saying it was excellent.
I enjoyed it a great deal, yeah. It gave us, you know, a look into what could have happened in all the different alternate realities involved in Civil War and Secret Invasion. That was it. It was a nice... cute story. Cute's not even the word. Damn it, you put the word cute in my head, thanks to that shit that you said. it was a starter story, but it's not the type of starter story you need to enjoy Fantastic Four. In fact, you know what? This is the way I'll describe it, actually. James Robinson created a story in Justice League, Cry for Justice, which I'm sure is going to lead directly into his Justice League series. Dale Eaglesham created a series in Dark Reign of... Fantastic Four, which leads into it but is not entirely necessary to the story. That's the way I'll describe it. Okay. All right, good. Anyway, cool. Did you enjoy it?
Oh, hell yeah.
Same here. This is the best Fantastic Four since Mark Waid wrote it. Straight up.
I did read the Mark Waid run, and that was good.
Yeah.
I read it after the fact, but I really enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And I enjoyed this as well. I liked the Miller and Hitch stuff when it started off, but it kind of started to peter off once they got to Christmas and they weren't doing anything for 4 issues. and then just kind of felt rushed at the end, but I really enjoyed this. Yeah.
Man, Dale Eaglesham's pencils in this book. Holy shit.
Yeah, I knew the man was good, but goddamn, the man is good.
This steps it up a level. I mean, this is the same guy who's been drawing Justice Society of America for how many years now?
For, you know, 2+ years, basically. Yeah.
And that stuff was fantastic. This takes it up a level. And
this is also the same guy who, for me, was like the first real artist on Green Lantern that I really liked.
Same here. Same here.
You know, on Kyle.
Yep. Yep, back when Winnick was writing it. Yep,
and he did the design that Jim Lee the Jim Lee costume that when the Eaglesham drew it. I really loved that too. So,
oh yeah, there's a reason why I have that shirt. But yeah, and what's interesting about Eaglesham here is that the way that he drew this, he drew it on the computer, and then basically inked his own stuff by turning up the gain to the point where the pencils become their own inks.
No, he didn't. Did he draw it on the computer?
Yeah, he did.
Are you sure?
I'm 100% certain. Yep.
I thought it was all pencils.
It is, but it's penciled on the computer. Dude, that's the way things work now.
No, I thought he did it in pencil and used the pencil to get all of the different thicknesses and textures he wanted, and then the colorist turned up the gain in certain areas to get the blacks and
okay.
stuff.
Okay, see, what I heard was what I said. I could be wrong. Maybe I'm just remembering the actual
I don't think Eaglesham is as skilled to do all this on the computer.
Okay, hold on. I'm going to look it up right now, actually, because right. I want this answered, because I thought I heard that. I could be wrong. If I'm wrong, then I'll correct myself. One second.
Because I think I heard CGS was talking about it again, which is, says how late we are. They're talking about all the books that we're talking about. But, yeah, I think looking at, like, the third page in here, where it's, like, the full splash page, vamp? That's the thing I'm talking about while you're looking that up. But you can look at the Human Torch right here, and you can see it very much looks like pencil shading and straight lines, and I don't see how you could replicate that on a computer.
Okay, no, I'm entirely wrong.
Thank you.
I'm going to straight up say it. I was entirely wrong. Yeah, he took it from the pencils that Eaglesham did, and
because
then he turned up the brightness.
They put out the pencils for this book.
Yes.
You saw them before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it's just I wasn't certain if those were pencils done on a computer or not, and obviously they're not, because you can do a lot with a computer these days that you couldn't do otherwise, specifically with Cintiqs, that it's pretty much drawing onto a computer, mm-hmm. you know, straight up the way that it would look otherwise. But yes, this was scanned in, and the gain was turned up on that to basically ink itself. Incredibly tight pencils done here, and yeah, you can tell. I mean, the detail on the thing. I mean, this is one of my favorite looking Ben Grimms I've ever seen. It makes me very happy inside.
Oh, I finally saw the rock tongue. I was wondering where the hell that was, and I finally found it.
You've been waiting this entire time, huh?
I have.
Yeah, it's right there. Yep, I'm looking at it right now. So the concept also, I mean, obviously other people have brought this up before, but about the sort of thinker mindless drones, mad thinkers mindless drones, and the child that was found there. You think we're gonna see this kid again?
I think so. Didn't they take him in or something, or talk about it?
They Reed mentioned that the proper authorities had to deal with it, and that you know they'll find him a good home, yada yada yada. But I'm sort of thinking that Fantastic Four are gonna wind up with a third kid.
He's kind of looking at the reader like he's not looking at the reader for no reason.
He's looking at the reader like why don't you love me?
Yeah.
Take me home. I want dinner.
But that's not even what this issue was all leading up to. I mean, the multiple Reed Richards and stuff,
mm-hmm.
one of them wearing a Star Trek emblem, one of them looking like Wilson Fisk, and the other one from God knows where with Infinity Gauntlets. Man, oh man, that was just a beautiful, I love the concept.
This whole idea was so creative and so sounds like something that Reed Richards of anywhere would have done. You know, gathering together basically a league of Richards. You know, because why wouldn't you take the most intelligent man in your universe and bring them together with other versions of Reed to protect everybody? It makes sense. Mm-hmm.
And I want to know why there was why alternate universes are not like these that we're seeing in here, where it's totally different. Basically, it's the same guy, mm-hmm. but it's totally different. I hate going to an alternate universe and seeing basically the same people.
I hear you.
I want to go to an alternate universe and see people like this, where you have a bodybuilder Reed Richards, a fat blob Reed Richards, you know, a rocky big brained Reed Richards. A Viking Reed Richards, or Reed Richards on fire, you know, an Adam Strange Reed Richards. There's a Silver Surfer Reed Richards
Lex
in there.
Lex Luthor Reed Richards.
Yeah,
that was my favorite one.
There's a Quasar Nova Reed Richards in here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's just, man, I love it.
Well, and how about the Deathlock Reed Richards?
Deathlock.
Yeah, on the bottom there, it looks like there's a cyborg Reed Richards.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it looks like he's basically got Deathlock's parts there. But this proved to me just how limitless the idea of multiverses can be. Not everybody goes to that well, like you mentioned, but those are always my favorite what-ifs. You know, ones that go so far out into left field that it's the same character, but it's totally not. You know, and the way that the other Reed Richards introduced themselves to our Reed, you know, having one that lights himself on fire and one that turns invisible, basically just saying, well, we were chosen for a reason because we're ones that I guess you'd be able to relate to the most. And then he sees all these other Reeds. Yeah, that is the way it's supposed to be. You know, not everybody's going to look exactly like the powers that a Fantastic Four would be, because multiverse is limitless, man. It's absolutely limitless. I am overjoyed by this idea. I'm a nerd. I am a nerd.
Yes, I think we all are.
Yes. Oh, and one other comment. I really want Marvel to stop running that misprinted ad that they've been running in comics for the past, like, 4 months.
Oh, you mean the Fab Star Point that's, like, miscolored?
Yeah.
In the back?
Yeah. That'd be nice, people.
That would be nice. But, yeah. Oh, well. But this issue, I'm going to give it a solid 5.
Dude, 5 for me as well. This is the most fun. Again, the most fun I've had with Fantastic Four since Mark Waid. No question about it. There's been other Fantastic Four I've liked. Like
JMS was good. McDuffie was good. But this is definitely the biggest first issue that started off with a bang.
This is a comic book that could bring the Fantastic Four back up to the pinnacle of Marvel where it belongs.
I mean, look how much attention Eaglesham brought to JSA while he was on it.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so I think he can do the same thing here, especially with his fantastic art. I mean, that was sort of the other problem with JSA, the fact that it wasn't so fast, but also that there was never, you know, you would get two issues by the same inker, and then it would go to a different inker and multiple inkers, and it would kind of lose the touch and feel of it. Whereas here, if it does, you know it's Eaglesham's fault and not the inker's, because he doesn't have one.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. But that's something I'm also afraid of, because he's penciling it, that we might slow down a bit here. But he's been off of JSA for a couple of months, and he's been doing – he did like a couple pages in some Spider-Man stuff, you know.
He's got lead time.
Months and months ago. He should have plenty of lead time.
Mm-hmm. And we always say
that, and it always comes back to bite us in the ass, so here's hoping.
Well, and what I think Marvel will be able to do is something similar to what DC does these days, where if for some reason Eaglesham cannot draw an issue, they will know about it, and they will get somebody good to fill in for that specific issue and just go back to Eaglesham after that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that I'm perfectly okay with. Plus, I'm also looking. I'm looking farther at this here, and I just totally noticed the fat ass Reed Richards on the page with all the other Reeds. That's totally Bouncing Boy.
Yeah, definitely.
That just hit me now. I'm like, holy shit! Yeah, that makes sense. So, yeah, this is great, and this would be a fantastic way to finally have, and totally pun intended with that. I'm sorry, I've been doing the puns like crazy, but this would be a great way to have. Ultimate
Fantastic Four movie?
Well, no. Fantastic Four movie, yeah. But Ultimate Reed Richards finally meet our Reed Richards.
Is Ultimate Reed Richards still alive? I don't remember. I didn't read Ultimatum.
I believe he is. I think all the Fantastic Four are still alive, last I checked.
If you
want to have that crossover with the Ultimate Universe, now would be the time to do it. Because it would just be simple, and they probably wouldn't even realize it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what are we going on to next, Ian?
You know what? Let's get let's go back to DC. Let's do Doom Patrol. Since we did Fantastic Four.
I was hoping you'd pick that one.
Yeah. Since we did Fantastic Four, let's do the other weird team book.
Yeah. And this is definitely weird.
Yeah. Before we even get into the issue itself, let me just say, if this was Metal Men featuring Doom Patrol, I'd like it a lot better.
Oh, we're on the same page for once.
Huzzah, man. Huzzah.
Yeah, I would say that this, the best thing I liked about Doom Patrol number one was the Metal Men backup.
Mm-hmm.
It was so much fun.
Yeah.
It was so good. So, and I've been enjoying the Metal Men in Wednesday's comics, so that helps as well. But, man, this Kevin Maguire, I've never seen him to his, you know, we saw him on the Long Halloween or Short Halloween for Spider-Man.
Yeah.
And I've seen him in a couple other things. I read the and just, formerly known as Justice League, and I can't believe it's not Butter Justice League. I read those. I was impressed with the art, but here I really get why people revere him.
Oh yeah,
because it was everything I wanted. It was funny as hell, and I really like this a lot more than anything else I've seen him draw.
And his facial expressions are on the top of their game in that too. It was really a lot of fun, and I love the new girl, the new metal woman, I guess, whatever it is.
Everybody forgets about her.
Yeah,
I forgot about her.
Yeah, damn it, I'm trying to think of her name right now. This is horrible. All right, yeah, Copper. There we go.
Copper and Gold. I don't remember him being such a pompous asshole.
Yeah, that's revisionist. I think that's what New Earth Gold is like now.
Okay. Yeah. I did not read the Duncan Rouleau Metalman series, so if this has anything coming out of that, I don't know anything about it. But, you know, it's a Metalman. Who knows, you know?
Copper, where you been? We sure could have used you down in Brazil. But I was there. No kidding. Well, all right. So now that we talked about Metal Men, all right, I guess we can move on to the next comic. all right, fine.
You know, I would not pay $3.99 for a Metal Men backup. I'm sorry.
Yeah. I have.
It was good. It was great. But I'm not gonna pay $3.99 for a Metal Men backup.
I have issues. I think 2 and 3 of Doom Patrol pre-ordered. Maybe even 4. After that, I think I'm done. Unless it really gets better.
Poor man. See, I when you picked it, I groaned. When you picked it, I groaned. I went, ugh, God. And I did not bother to get 2, 3, whatever. I was like, I'm going to get this one because I know I didn't want to read it before. And now I'm really glad that I didn't want to read it before.
Well, we'll see. All right. When Doom Patrol appeared in Teen Titans, when Jeff Johns
was That was understandable.
Writing. Yeah.
I like that version of Doom Patrol.
Same here. Yeah. I was hoping for more of that.
I kind of feel like this Doom Patrol is just so dense and there's so lacking a beginning in an introduction to characters that you can't even get into it, much less make sense of the story once they get back to Oolong Island. I mean, who is this priest guy? And why is this green type so damn small that I can't read the doctor's notes?
Yeah.
And that bugged the hell out of me. And there's just too much. You're trying to fit in too much, I thought.
Okay.
And they didn't even bother to slow down, it felt like.
Well, okay, when Outsiders first started, the idea of Outsiders was to have a team that was a team but wasn't necessarily a family. You know, one that would be able to function normally.
Right. Was just a job.
Right. It was just a job. And yet, you still sort of liked the characters, you know? And you knew that if they happened to lose a character, they'd probably be a little sad about it, even though that they were just a team. All right? And yet, here I am reading Doom Patrol, and a character dies in this issue. One that obviously I didn't really know before because I'd never really read Doom Patrol before. And they just sort of are like, hey, you want to get pizza? And that just, it rubbed me the wrong way. It's not the type of team book that I want to be reading. I mean, I'm perfectly fine with a team just being a team and not a family. But when you don't even seem to like being on the team that you're on, what's the point of being there?
I didn't even like any of the characters.
Yeah. And I've liked Human.
That's probably what turned me off the book so much is that these characters were so unlikable that it felt like a chore to finish this book.
Yeah, and I've liked what is it? Human Robot? That's his name. The robot guy I've liked before.
Robot Man.
Thank you. Yeah, Human Robot would be Agents of Atlas. Yeah, all right. But you know, I've liked a bunch of these characters before when they were presented, and this. Just not really that much, and it kind of makes me want to read Grant Morrison's Doom Patrol just to understand where Keith Giffen was coming from this, because the way Dan DiDio described it to everybody when this was introduced was that this was going to be Keith Giffen's Doom Patrol. It wasn't going to be Morrison's Doom Patrol. It wasn't going to be the original Doom Patrol. It was going to be a new Doom Patrol that you could basically jump on the front door with and be happy that you did, and I'm not happy.
Well, you couldn't even jump on the front door because it didn't bother to go into anything.
Yeah. And, like, my favorite character in this up until, you know, he left the group was the frickin' Monkey Man. You know, I was interested in that. I was like, okay, where's this going to go? And doesn't even look like he's in there anymore because the one that was basically keeping him on the team is already Kaputsky.
Well, I thought the doctor girl they were talking to in the first page was going to be somebody, and she immediately turned into some weird robot insect whatever. Mm-hmm. And it's just like, well, she's the one person I like the most, and she's the villain. What the hell?
Yeah, it I don't know. It's like the execution just was not proper here, and they're base of operations is Oolong Island. When anybody who's read 52 or read DC Comics, you know, recently knows that that used to be where the villains lived.
I thought that was interesting, but that's – and then they moved on from there, and they didn't explore it at all, and it got into the really small doctor type, and I just went, you know what? It's not that interesting. I can pass on this fucking book.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And anybody who didn't get this, you're not missing anything. Matthew Clark, you're a great artist. Mm-hmm. I love your stuff. I'm sorry that you got shoved off to Doom Patrol. Ouch. And that you got mad when they didn't mention your name in the conventions or anything.
Yeah.
Because you are really trying your hardest here to make this work. And I'm sorry, I just can't justify $3.99 for your art and a great Metalman backup.
Yeah, I'll agree with the art as well. It was on par. It was on point. It was dead on. I loved Matthew Clark when he was on Outsiders, you know, bringing that up again. And it's just it's funny how you can go from a team that at least liked each other, even though they weren't a family, to this. You know, it's just, I mean, everything's described in this one panel where Robot Man's talking to Priest Dude, who we don't even really know. You know, how old was she? 18? 19? Old enough to know better. I mean, what? I'm sorry, what? You say this about a fallen colleague? It's, no, I'm sorry, just no. 1.5 out of 5. I'm being generous there. Honestly, it's 1.5 out of 5, mostly for the Metalman backup. That's the entire 1.5. That I would give a 5 out of 5, if I could.
I'm giving it a 1, okay. Because the comic is titled Doom Patrol and not Metalman.
Yeah.
Metalman, I'd give a 4, if this was a Metalman comic, but it's not.
Yeah, really, if you're hearing us, DC, switch it around. Do us a favor, switch it around. That way I could just skip the Doom Patrol part and just continue to read Metalman.
Mm-hmm.
That would make me a happy camper. In fact, that might even what I might wind up doing with issue 2 is just reading the Metalman part and then being like, oh, I'm done with my comic early. I'm gonna go make a sandwich.
The Magog first issue was better than that, and it's Keith Giffen by himself too.
Yeah, how was that?
It wasn't great, and I just read it a day or two ago. It wasn't great. I picked it up thinking it was going to be like the next Blue Beetle. But it's not, obviously, because it's a totally different character and a totally different approach. But it's interesting.
All right.
I'm going to stick around with it for, you know, maybe 6 issues or so and see where it goes.
Porter's art is good?
Yeah, oh, yeah. And that's the other draw for me.
Okay.
I love Howard Porter. So yeah.
I mean, and you know, not to mention it again, but, you know, the fact that he was able to reinvent himself and still look like he used to is amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Moving on.
Beast of Burden.
Beast of Burden. Why not? So, Mr. Dawkin. We meet again. This was fun. I liked it. It was fun. Even if this isn't really the ground floor, because I know that there were like 4 or 5 little mini stories that have occurred before, I didn't even really care that I didn't know everything that was going on with these guys, because you are able to relate to a bunch of dogs as you're dealing with the threat of a giant frog looking to decimate their little area. You know, that's just fun. I enjoyed it a lot. Straight up, enjoyed it a lot. You?
I can see where you get that, but really, to me, there's nothing to grab hold here. Because of the fact that there wasn't any introduction to the characters. And then when I got to the back of the book, I read the first paragraph, you know, before they got to the letters that are premature because the book hadn't even come out yet.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, oh, these have been somewhere else? Thanks for telling me. I thought this was, like, brand new. Who knew?
Yeah,
I have no clue.
The solicitation could have been a little clearer with that. Especially because, no, this is what you really should have done.
They could have had a character page on the left-hand side saying, you know, the pug is named blank. He is blank. The cat's name is blank.
Okay.
She is blank.
No. You don't even need that, Brent, because what was in the back of the book? A link showing you where you could read the early stories. Okay?
Really?
Yeah.
Didn't get that far.
Yeah, had you actually put that at the beginning of the book and said, stop, have you read this? They're available for free online at darkhorse.com/beastsofburden.
Where's the link?
That's all you need. It's, let's see, where was it here? Sir? I remember seeing it, so I'm not blind. Let me just try and find it here. Because I saw it, and I was like, oh, wow, okay. I can go ahead and read that.
I'm not seeing it.
What the hell was it? Oh, never mind. It was on the front cover. That's why I'm a dumbass. Yeah, right.
It's on the front.
Right here on the inside cover. Read the earliest Beast stories here at darkhorse.com/beast.
Oh, that tiny little thing?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
I almost didn't bother to read the thing to the left.
Mm-hmm. To the left. That's why you really should have put that on the first page. You know? That's an indie comic thing. Putting the information of the artist and the writer and stuff like that on the inside cover.
I always just assume it's an ad, so I skipped it almost until I went, hold on a second, there's a paragraph there. Mm-hmm. Okay, moving on. But, you know, I like the art. Jill Thompson did a great job.
Oh, gorgeous art.
Fantastic. Yeah. Gorgeous presentation. The paper is nice and thick and crisp. I think it helps it out a lot.
And I like that this is
beautiful colors. Mm-hmm. It's just that it was so – this really was like a cute thing. It wasn't very spooky. I really don't see any reason or need to go on and get the rest of three issues. I mean, basically, this could have been an animated movie, and you could have built it – like the animated movie would have built up whatever society they're joining at the end,
mm-hmm.
and then just have that end and go, great, we're a team now. And that's what I got out of this issue. I was like, oh, well, I cannot read the series because, you know, this issue hit was like basically a one-and-done story.
Well, it didn't feel like a kid's book to me. I'll say that.
It didn't, but it could very well could have.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, had you gotten rid of some of the blood and, you know, some of the deaths and stuff like that, it would have been a kid's book. But
it felt like that was kind of put in there specifically to make you go, oh, this is not a kid's book. There's a dead deer head there.
Mm-hmm.
Or this one says ass, or, you know, whatever.
Well, I got the fact that these dogs were protecting their town. I got the fact that one of them was obviously injured in a previous adventure, and we find out later on in the book that, yes, he was bitten by a werewolf, so that gave him, you know, super extraordinary powers.
Well, whoop-de-fucking-do. There's nothing about it here.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's just
I didn't think you really needed that. I think you got everything you needed from the story. At least in my honest opinion. I mean, yours is certainly allowed to be different, dude. It's just I felt like I got enough out of this story to enjoy it.
Okay, good.
All right.
I'm glad you did because I'm you know, Evan Dorkin, I don't know what he's done. Mm-hmm. To me, Evan Dorkin has done Beast of Burden, and that's it. Okay. I don't know what he's done elsewhere. He's not
– Supergirl episodes of Superman the Animated Series.
Okay, well, I mean, that's – I don't know. It's just it doesn't ring a bell for me other than the thing you did with him. And even in that Ada episode, I was like, who the fuck is this guy? I'm sorry. He's just not a big-name comic creator. I don't know why he's – I guess because you've always joked about whatever happened with you guys, you know, in that one late-night bar thing. I mean, it's just whatever. He wrote a very capable story.
Yeah.
I just feel that I don't have to go on and read the rest of it. Or feel the need to go back and read the previous ones. So.
And that's perfectly valid and acceptable. You know, I mean, that happens all the time with comics. You know, sometimes you're just not drawn to a specific story. You know? I mean, you're allowed, dude. I mean, it's not like I'm saying your opinion isn't valid or anything.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that you are. Yeah. Just, you know, I thought this might be something I'd enjoy, and I did. And it's just kind of like, oh, okay.
Yeah. It's a throwaway, basically.
Yeah. Right. It is. For me, it's a throwaway. So I'll give it a 2.
All right. I'll give it a solid 3.5. It's something that, you know, I don't think I'm going to – I'm not even sure if I'm going to pick up issue 2. But mm-hmm. if I ever see a collected edition for like $5 at a show or something like that, I'll happily pick it up and read it. You know,
I hope the collected edition includes the first stuff because
– That would be nice.
That would be a great addition to it.
Well, tell you what. I want to hear from people – anybody who's read the early stuff of this, whether or not they feel that this was a nice continuation of that, or whether or not you guys felt that it didn't really need that or whatever. And then I want to hear from the guys who might have just picked this up because we were reviewing it and get your opinions. If you could just post that on the forum, let us know what's going on. That would be nice because I'll probably go on darkhorse.com/beastofburden to read those early issues and then probably even reread the story to see if it makes any more sense and see if that makes a difference sometime soon. But would that have made a difference for you, Brent? Had you read the early stuff first, do you think?
No, not really.
All right.
The talking animals thing just doesn't – it doesn't appeal to me. And the skull and crossbones they put on the cover to make it seem ominous and stuff just felt like you're just trying to lure people in, and when really it's kind of a cute, kind of funny story.
You ever read We Three?
No, but I want to.
You should.
But that's Grant Morrison and Frank Quitely, so I know that's solid.
Yes, that is indeed solid. And did you read Pet Avengers?
No, and I have no desire to.
That is actually very fun.
I'm not looking for fun. I'm looking for good stories.
It's also a good story.
Just pet stuff is never really, you know.
Oh, you.
I've never had pets.
You. That's why you never had Joy as a child. That's totally why you didn't like it. All right. I mean, everything
we had
makes sense
had
to me.
We had one pet. We had a pet when I was like 10. No. I was like 13 when we got our first pet, and it was a turtle we found in the back of the pool. And we took the turtle. It wasn't even my pet. It was my brother's pet, and they put it in his room, and he was there for a couple years. And then he got too big to keep in a fish tank, so we let him go.
I like turtles.
And Mandy has a dog, and that's about all I have.
I've been around dogs my entire life. My father is a dog groomer.
I know.
And
you have experiences with pets, so
yes.
And I mean, I love Mandy's dog. I love Baxter. He's, you know, he can be a dick sometimes. He can be wonderful sometimes. Mainly now, whenever I go over there, he just runs up to me and wants to be petted because. He doesn't see me as often as he did when we were in Gainesville. So,
yeah.
You know, that's why he's likes me so much now. But
well,
used
to
be, he didn't. So,
any dog will be like, hey, attention, love me, attention. Yeah. You have a treat.
And basically, there are two other dogs in Manny's house right now that he's competing with. So, and I don't really like the other two dogs because one of them's annoying. One of them's kind of like going old and it's just kind of annoying too. So it's just kind of like, Baxter, you're going to get all my attention. So that's why he comes to me because he knows I kick the other dog that I don't like and I shoot the other dog that's old and dumb.
Okay.
So
see, I've learned two things about you. One, you didn't have a childhood, and two, you hate old people. I have learned so much about you, Mr. Cassina.
The dog is the older dog is she's like losing control of her bladder or something, and she's blind in one and a half eyes.
One and a half.
She's like blind in one eye and losing vision in the other.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if she can hear. I don't know if her sense of smell is because I'm over there a lot, and she still always barks whenever I walk in. And all the dogs bark, but as soon as you come in and they recognize who you are, they'll stop.
Doggy Alzheimer's.
So it's just really annoying.
All right, fine. Let's stop talking about dogs and start talking about red hoods.
Okay, good.
All right. So Philip Tan's first issue on Batman and Robin. Quitely is off the book at this point. I don't know if he's coming back eventually. I'm sure he probably is for maybe one or two more issues.
I don't think so because they announced Cameron Stewart as the next artist after this one.
Mm-hmm.
And then Fraser Irving, who we'll get to later in this episode.
All right, so Quitely's just going to stay on covers?
I guess so.
All right.
But,
that's fine.
You know, while we're on the subject, Cameron Stewart, I've never read any of his stuff, and I saw the cover on it. And I'm really kind of hesitant because
you know what? Cameron Stewart reminds me a lot of the artist that was on Green Arrow, Black Canary when it started. Was that Chung?
Cliff Chang?
Yeah, Cliff Chang. Yeah.
No. This Cameron Stewart kind of looked like, you know how they have like cartoony styles, and it basically is like another word for less rendered than Dale Eggersham, mm-hmm. something like that.
Yeah,
this guy looks like it's a fucking Ren and Stimpy cartoon that he's drawn.
What?
It's loopy and shit. Batman, it looked like Walt Flanagan's Batman from Kevin Smith. The proportions on his jaw, and there's just so much stuff wrong with it. I was just like, I know I'm going to tear my hair out reading these issues of Batman.
Dude, this was one image.
I know.
Let me know what you think once the actual issues are out, all right?
I will.
Let's not become the Newsarama forums here and shit on something before it actually comes out, all right?
Okay.
All right, good. All right, let's talk about the issue that actually did come out with Philip Tan on art. And this takes the bad taste I had in my mouth after reading his Green Lantern issues completely out of my mouth.
This is totally what he was doing on Revelations, which was great.
Hell yeah. Mm-hmm. Definitely. It's gritty, but not so gritty where you can't see things. The characters look like the characters. Overall, I'm pleasantly surprised in all the right ways. And Morrison continues to be Morrison. What else is there?
I'm so surprised that everyone really had doubts about Philip Tan for some reason. I never doubted him in the first place because of Revelations was so good.
Yes, but
Green Lantern was a bit of a stumbling point. Yeah. But, I mean, it's like people were forgetting that he did a great job on Revelations.
Well, but what had he done before Revelations?
Spawn, I think, my knowledge, and some other stuff that I don't remember.
All right. Well,
but mostly Spawn.
Well, as you'll know very well, there are plenty of artists that just do one good thing and can never really recapture that glory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that's what some people were worried about with Philip Tan, that, yeah, sure, Revelations might have been great, but Green Lantern not so much. Maybe it's not time for his star to be rising the way it is. But I think this issue with Batman and Robin proves that rise, baby, rise, because you're there.
Yeah.
This was great. I mean, the way that he was able to put Red Hood and what the hell's the name of the sidekick?
Scarlet?
Scarlet, thank you, yeah. And you know, in the shadows when they first show up, I mean, Scarlet looks frightening, man. All you see is the white teeth.
The title page when it says Revenge of the Red Hood, oh, I love that splash. Mm-hmm. It's like a classic Batman and Robin image, but flipped on its head, you know?
Yeah.
And dark and gritty and gloomy. I think this is going to shape up to be a great little three issues.
In fact,
especially because I love the Red Hood so much, if it is in fact Jason.
If it's Jason. And you know what? Even if it's not Jason, I'll be curious to know who it is.
Yeah. And I like the new costume. I really do.
Well, this is a nice combination, I hear, because it's a combination of Joker's original Red Hood outfit and the current, you know, well, not current, but the previous Red Hood outfit. I think it meshes those well enough, and plus it's got that Batman feel to it, you know, mm-hmm. where as opposed to the bat, you get the skull.
Well, it keeps the original hood and cape from the Joker's one, mm-hmm. and then it's kind of got that grittiness that Jason Todd had with, like, the leather jacket and the utility boots and gloves and stuff that he had when Judd Winnick was writing it.
How does he see in that?
I guess it's like Cyclops' Ruby Quartz visor. How does he see? You know? How does he see? It's clear. It's just, you know, there's so many reflections off it because he polishes it so much that you can't see it. How do you see out a tinted window? You can't see in, but you can see out.
It's magic. You don't have to explain it.
So I'm not talking about Marvel books anymore. We're done with those.
That's fine. That's fine. And Jonathan Glapione, the inker, have we seen him before?
Yes, he inks Tony Daniel.
Okay.
He inked Tony Daniel on Batman. Yeah. So when Tony Daniel came on Batman, he jumped on.
You know, that makes totally sense to me because I was thinking that this looks like a Batman that I'm familiar with. You know, specifically the Batman that he's drawing.
Glapione was doing the Green Lantern stuff as well.
Oh. Hmm. Okay.
I think.
Okay.
Yeah, pretty sure he was.
But I think it is definitely a different colorist than Green Lantern.
Yeah.
All right. Okay, because that could make all the difference. Because a lot of the people's problems with the Green Lantern stuff was that there was just some stuff you just couldn't see.
Oh, this is Pete Pantanzas.
Pete Pantanzas?
Yeah, from Raging Bullets.
Oh, excellent.
Well, wow, because I've always seen him on stuff that it was like really cartoony and really like loosely colored and stuff. Mm-hmm.
And this is certainly a step up.
But this is like, whoa.
Yeah, I mean, really, this is a issue.
This is like an art that lets you show off your coloring, basically.
Oh, certainly.
You know.
Because you've got the blacks, you've got the colors, you've got that bathed in red feel going on that... You know, you could do it right or you could do it wrong. I mean, either it's so red that you can't see anybody, or it's red where it's ominous, and that's exactly what we get out of this with the scenes with Red Hood in their I guess their cave.
Their red cave.
The red cave. Yes.
I don't know what it's called. Hood cave.
Yeah, and how about the fact that she won't take off the face?
I don't think she can.
She doesn't want to either, from the looks of it.
No, she's wondering about a doctor can help her. I think I remember them gluing it on.
Yeah, well, she got the same treatment that everybody else in Pig's army got.
Yeah.
And then she, you know, flipped.
She
and,
ran off.
Yeah. And the Batman and Robin in this.
Yeah, the Batman on the last page kind of reminds me of like Ed McGuinness's Batman.
Mm-hmm.
The way that it's, I guess, just the hood and the way the cape's drawn, and you know, the cowl and the cape are drawn here, but it's very, very strong.
Oh yeah,
really digging it.
Definitely. Now, do you think it's Jason?
Why not?
Yeah.
Sure.
All right. Okay. I mean, after all, he does. Different. After all, he does say Jason.
Yeah, I want to know who the big purple dildo is, though.
What the shit, man?
In the meeting of the criminal masterminds, there's a guy with a big purple dildo on his head.
All right.
Who is that guy?
Hold on. I'm flipping back here. Let's see.
And Red Hood sweeps in and kicks the shit out of him.
No, I see. Isn't that the... that's the same guy that they were dealing with before.
No, there is no purple dildo.
Yes, that's not a dildo. That's a, like, KKK hood.
Only they're not that big, I don't think.
Dude, that's exactly what it is. It's the guy that they were talking about. That's the guy
his
that was
boss
in
is El Penitente, but they never say his name.
Yeah.
I don't think they do.
I swear we've seen this guy before. Whether it be in RIP or whether it be in that arc with the World Batman. You know, the League of Batman?
No, I don't think so.
Hmm. All right, well.
I'm just curious about this flamingo character in a pink plane.
He's pink and he's gay. Let's move on. All right.
That ought to be interesting.
He's pink and he's special. He's super. Thanks for asking.
But I just think it's interesting that Red Hood is keeping up the same thing he was doing as Jason, where fighting crime but killing the guys. You know, he's kind of the Batman that's crossed the line a little bit.
Yeah, well, he realized, okay, if they're not going to let me be Batman, then I'm just going to be me. I'm going to be Red Hood.
Which, yeah.
Again, going by the assumption that this is Jason, but even if it's not, he's being Jason. You know, he's going by the same MO that Jason Todd had the last time around. But this is funny because we really haven't seen much of an anti-Batman and Robin in the book of Batman before. I mean, we've seen anti-Batman, but not too much of the anti-Robin. So this is going to be an interesting dynamic, I think.
Like, very much so.
Have we ever gotten like evil Robins before?
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Villains don't have sidekicks. They have henchmen, then they kill them.
Except for Harley Quinn.
Exactly.
Yeah. She's special. Oh, and dude, one more comment. Penguin's nose. Oh my god.
It looked like Penguin got squished more than he usually was.
I'm thinking to myself, this is not Danny DeVito's Penguin here. I mean, this is a guy who was mercilessly teased as a child for that honker. Oh my god. But overall, man, this was a 4.5 out of 5 for me. I mean, like, this was probably, I might have even enjoyed this better than the Quietly issues. And that's saying a lot because I like Quietly.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you. This is a 4.5 for me.
And even better than the Quietly issues because, hey, the faces look normal. Oh!
Oh. You know what? I read the last Quietly issue and I kind of was left, I don't know. I left feeling wanted.
Yeah?
I didn't feel that much for it. The first issue was good. The second was cool. And then the third one was just kind of like, eh. So I don't know if I have to reread him in order again. We'll see.
Yeah, maybe. Well, if you're feeling wanted, just read it. Damn.
I did read it recently.
Oh, yeah?
It was good.
Yeah, good.
I read it again and again.
Sweet. Good art. Pretty art. This is my face as I'm kicking your ass or whatever it was. That last panel.
As I'm fucking you in the ass.
That's better, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, and since we're done with DC after this, just looking at the back page real quick. So what do you think of Batgirl's new costume?
Interesting. I kind of don't like the pick for Batgirl. I really didn't think we needed a new Batgirl series, much less a Batgirl.
No,
so,
I agree.
I'm not picking up the series. I never will, I don't think.
Wow.
I said the same thing about Supergirl.
And
Supergirl's been pleasantly great. So, but that's probably because it was tying into New Krypton. That's why I picked it up in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we picked up that first issue when Jamal and Sterling came on. And, you know, props to you, Jamal. You can charge $30 for a sketchbook. I'm only kidding. I'm going to buy one when I see him because I owe him that much.
That is, dude, that's going to go down in history as the snarkiest episode of Comic Timing.
It was. It was. And it was all in good fun.
It was. Of course it was
and
in good fun.
Everybody knew that except the listeners maybe because I kind of deadpanned it.
Hey, Jamal Igel would have never retweeted the episode had he not liked being on it. Oh, boy. Good times.
I just wanted to give him a different side of comic book podcast fandom. You got Raph on one hand and me on the other.
And,
you know.
And never shall the two meet.
Yeah.
Except for when they do.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're going to Super Show.
Yeah. I hope so.
Yeah. Good. 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 Because you are.
I are.
I know.
Yeah. March. March. I should be able to go.
Yeah. Good. Good. Yeah. Just checking. Yeah, my favorite thing about that is that that's the same weekend as PAX East, which pisses me off a little bit. But Chris,
what's PAX East?
Penny Arcade Expo East.
What's PAX East?
The Penny Arcade guys have a gaming show that for the first time is going to be on the East Coast in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
It's run by Reed Exhibitions, the same guys who do New York Comic Con.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of wanted to go to that, but it's the same weekend as Super Show. And I'm like, you know what? Shady Maple. That wins out. But
while we're on the topic of conventions, I didn't get to tell you about Mini MegaCon.
Oh, dude, son of a bitch. Yeah, come on. Wait on me.
And I met up with Travis and Sean.
Sweet.
And I was going to call them as soon as I walked in the floor, and then I spotted them. They had the gaming section right next to the opening.
Nice.
I was like, oh, there they are. So they're hanging with some guys playing Warhammer 40K.
Mm-hmm.
So Sean was nice enough to explain to me the intricacies of what the hell that game was.
Okay.
At least the model building part of it. So that was kind of cool. And we walked around for the floor a little bit. Basically, compared to the MegaCon that you were at the last 2 years, I would say it's about a third to a quarter of that size.
All right. Hence the mini.
I mean, it went from the front of the convention to the back.
Mm-hmm.
But just cut it, you know, into thirds longwise, basically, is all you got.
Same space?
Same building.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the older building this year. And I think it was in the almost the same hall.
Okay.
They just, you know, put it into thirds and stuff. So it was a lot smaller, but it was nice to go and you know, and just have a convention twice a year in Orlando. Other than like the FX show, I've never been to, but that's usually around the same time MegaCon is in the spring. So, and I got a lot. So
you got quite a bit, a lot,
quite a bit, a lot. Yeah,
that's a new turn of phrase right there.
Well, I picked up like a bunch of the Judd Winnick Green Arrow issues, and what else did I get? I picked up some Spawn stuff. I got a lot of Azrael at Night issues
because
I'm like, I'm going to bind these suckers. Going to bind these suckers.
Hell yeah. And now a comic book binding
they can,
is not going
now that
away.
They're back.
Yeah.
I kind of panicked there for a little bit.
Same here.
So I got to figure out, I got to start doing this before I amass a whole bunch of issues and something other drastically bad happens. So I got to start getting on that.
I got to start binding my young justice soon.
Yeah.
That'd be nice. Well, did you get any sketches or anything?
No, I was just kind of focused. I was only there for a couple hours.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't want to spend the whole weekend there. I didn't want to spend the whole day. I just kind of had a shopping list. I wanted to say hi to Sean and Travis and hang out with them for a little bit, and so I did. So
yeah, and I still need to send Travis his freaking issue eventually of the Hunter Killer I picked up for him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, eventually.
And they did say a couple things about Doombox that they're doing, and I can say they have very, very, very big things coming up.
Really?
That they're going to announce on our show first. So
very cool. Very cool.
And I'm not just like hyperboling here because, you know me, I'm usually not one for hyperbole.
Mm-hmm.
But when they told me what they got lined up right now, my jaw dropped.
Okay.
I was like, I could not believe that you guys got this thing going.
Talk to me after the show.
I don't even know if I could, if I should.
Oh, just, yeah, who the hell am I going to tell? Shit.
That's what I said, Here I am telling you, teasing all the listeners.
Well, they'll
be in the back, but
Well, they'll certainly be on the show once they can announce it. That much is a given.
Yeah,
because we started a career. Yeah, you heard me. You heard me. What? What are you gonna do about it? What are you gonna do? All right.
And Sean admits he's still like woefully behind on episodes. So
yeah,
I kind of think he just listens to the ones he's on. But that's cool.
That's all good. It's all good. That's fine. Good. That's what I do. I mean, I only listen to the episodes I'm on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Me too.
Hey, wait.
Unless someone makes me edit them.
Hey, wait a minute. I've been on all the episodes.
Yeah.
That's confusing.
That's confusing.
One of these days, I am just going to hand you the reins and just let you like roll with it, and I'll just be like not even here. I'll just be like off and eating a sandwich.
You know how bad that the last show topic one, I tried to lead that, and it's just you have the knack for it. I don't.
It didn't go that bad, man.
It wasn't that great either. You have the knack for asking intermediate questions between the one you've already wrote up, and I was just – I'm brain dead.
So, Brent, tell me how you really feel.
I really can't lead a show like you can, Ian.
Oh, please, please, please. Stroke my ego a little bit more. Just a little bit more.
Okay, so Day's Missing. What'd you think?
Well, I thought that it was written by Phil Hester and that the art was by Fraser Irving. Mm-hmm. And I thought that it was 99 cents.
That was fantastic.
And I thought that it was worth $2.99.
$3.99.
Yeah. This issue, I guess the best way to describe it would be like, take the premise of The Watcher and actually...
Except where he intervenes and does shit.
Yes, exactly.
And is not 50-foot tall Mr. Clean.
It's like... Actually, the best way to describe it, it's like The Watcher meets Doctor Who. For someone who doesn't know Doctor Who like you, you might not say that nearly as much as I do, but it's an outsider coming in, helping things, and then hopefully putting things back the way that they were supposed to be.
Mm-hmm. I really didn't understand the title of it, Days Missing.
Mm-hmm.
I guess just because he goes from one day to the next day, not really like, he is immortal, I'm guessing, because he was around the time of the dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking that he moves through time linearly, just skips around.
Right.
Well, 5 years, 10 years, whatever, mm-hmm. and maybe we're getting a story that skips around in his own timeline because it looks like the next issue takes place in the 1700s or 1800s.
Okay. My reasoning behind the title is that wherever he goes, he might save things, but all records of him being there are missing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so like yeah, he stopped this plague, but nobody knows he did it. He's the only one who gets to.
Well, everyone who could died.
No, that's not the point, man. To the outside world, this was just a plague that was contained, and his part in it will never be known. You know?
Mm-hmm.
Although he knows that this could have been the turning part for the human race. This could have been the end of the human race as we know it, but he stopped it.
Okay.
Yeah. Art?
What cover did you get?
I got the, what cover is this? Okay, my cover has the main title with, main title character with his hand out.
Yeah, I have that. Dale Keown.
Yeah, there you go.
Beautiful cover.
Very pretty.
I wish he would do more stuff.
Hells yeah, that would be nice. But, and Fraser Irving's interiors.
This is like the best Fraser Irving I've seen.
Here, here.
To be honest. Mm-hmm. I liked him on the Azrael Mini that we reviewed. But this blows that away by far.
Oh, yeah.
And he did some stuff. He did like two issues on Robin with Clarion the Witch Boy. I really didn't feel that. But here, just, whew, man.
Well, what I really dug about this was that each character feels unique. You know, that's sometimes hard to do when a lot of your main characters are inside of like hazmat suits.
Mm-hmm.
But you still got their own distinct personalities.
Mm-hmm.
Through the art, and that is killer. That's something that you totally need in here. And Phil Hester, he's an artist as well as a writer, so obviously he's writing dialogue, he's writing descriptions to help along the artist, and I'm sure that probably did help Fraser in certain situations. But Phil Hester, man, this is actually the first thing I've read of Phil Hester. I've seen his art plenty of times, but I'm sold on him as a writer now, no question.
I think so too. Mm-hmm. This is the first time I've read anything by him.
And how do you like him giving the quote unquote cure to the guard to get on? It tastes like a mint. Well, it's supposed to. That's how we're supposed to distribute it to everybody.
That was great. I love that. That was great.
Stupid people are stupid.
Yeah, but this was just a really interesting story, and I think it's a really interesting take how it's just one story in one issue,
mm-hmm.
and it's a miniseries. I thought it was going to be an ongoing thing, and that's mostly the main complaint I have when we do indies. They're mostly miniseries.
Mm-hmm.
They're always number one, and they're never a a single story.
Right.
We've lucked out recently with this one, and Beast of Burden was like a single story, and the Hellboy one was a one-shot, so that lucked out there. But, I mean, that's mostly my complaint, is that most of these, I don't order the second or third issues and just kind of like, you know, miss out on the rest of it. But here, I can kind of go.
Yeah.
I've got a good story, and, you know, I don't have to go and pick up the rest of them. I might pick up a trade if it comes out, but you know, it's compelling me to check out the rest of them.
Yeah,
I'm still missing 5 and 6 of Bang Tango, though.
I have 5 and 6 of Bang Tango. However, I still need to read 2 through 6.
Okay. Yeah. Well, 2, 3, and 4, we're good.
Awesome. I am planning on reading them. It's just that my backlog is ridiculously large.
Yeah.
Another comment about Fraser here, very cinematic. Like the panel layout is you know it's a typical panel layout, but the action scenes you feel the action going on. I mean, yeah, with all the swirling lines and everything, that does sort of help. But you know, like when the little girl is falling, and I mean when the other little girl falls out of his hands, there's nothing that the main character can do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
That's you can feel it. You know, and that's something that art needs to convey, and I think they did a good job with that here. Now, hold on. What, the main character, does he even have a name? Do we know his name yet?
I don't think we do.
Okay.
No.
All right, so he's just Guy Incognito right now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks a little... The main character looks a little bit like Adam Warlock.
He does. With silver hair,
and
glowy eyes.
Glowy eyes, yeah.
Kind of yellowish face.
Yeah, I mean, not that I'm sure that wasn't intentional or anything, but hey, why not? It works.
Fraser Irving is a digital artist too, right?
Yes, he is. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he draws little girls well.
What is he doing next? I feel like he's doing something big for Marvel or DC next.
Ooh.
But I can't remember.
That's a good question. Let me look him up. Let me see if he's on any solicitations. Wasn't he doing some issues of Cable? I could be wrong though.
I don't remember. I was going to say it was Azrael, but he did the mini. He's not doing the main series.
Right.
Ramon Box is doing the main series, which I'm kind of hesitant about because his Red Robin stuff not that great. But I'm glad they finally got a younger-looking artist on Red Robin.
Marcus Toe, did you see
the issues for that?
Wait, I'm sorry. Say again. I was distracted by Wikipedia.
Did you see the Marcus Toe images for Red Robin coming up?
No, I didn't, actually.
It's a lot better improvement. It's like a... you're going to get a younger-looking Red Robin and a younger-looking Tim Drake.
Oh, thank you.
Not a 30-year-old Red Robin and a 15-year-old Tim Drake.
Yeah, I'm sorry. What the hell? I mean, Ramon Box is a good artist, but what?
I think he's going to be a better fit on Azrael. So.
Okay. And to answer your question, actually, he's doing an arc on Batman and Robin.
Oh, yeah. I just said that a minute ago. Duh.
Yeah.
If it's anything like this, it's going to be fantastic.
Yeah, it was originally going to be after Philip Tan's, but Cameron Stewart's is going to be in between there, so I assume that's going to happen after that now.
Yeah.
You know, he's done other stuff, too. I mean, like, he did Time Storm 2099 with Brian Reed for Marvel.
Which I wanted you to get, but we didn't.
Yes.
At least the first issue.
Yes, well, maybe we'll get it eventually, and we'll talk about it in a separate episode.
I don't think so.
Oh, yeah? Why not?
I don't know. I missed the first issue.
Yes, so did I. And the other one after that. But guess what? That's what dollar bins are for. Sucker.
Sucker.
Yeah, it's compelling. The fonts are easy to read, too. Let me make that comment. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Because some of the... I mean, not even go... I mean, sure, going with the Doctor script that we couldn't read in
Doom Patrol.
But also... I find this problem with a lot of independents. They'll choose a font that's either boring or impossible to read for certain like script. And when he's writing in script, as if it's, you know, his own personal memoirs.
Yeah, yeah, you can read it.
You can read it, yeah, and that makes me very happy. So,
like for me, the script whenever they do that, it's like they almost always want to pick something that's not just normal script. So that it feels like handwriting. And it's like, just pick something I can read. I get the picture.
Yes.
I get the point.
And from now on, November 11th will be known as Hilda.
and we're done. Under 2 hours. How about that? Hey.
What? Come on,
what?
Man.
What? I don't know. I'm just saying.
It's true. It's true.
We did a good job.
Yes, we did a good job of getting through 8 issues somehow in the 2 hours that we usually...
Because I kept us moving along because you just wanted to...
Oh, I see how it is. Chat, 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 chat,
chat, chat, chat, chat, chat, chat, chat, chat, chat, chat.
Where's the paperwork? All right. I'll never stop saying that joke. I give this issue, considering that we didn't actually say it, 4 out of 5. It is a very good one-and-done series that makes me want to read more.
Yeah, 4 out of 5.
Booyah.
And I think the rest of the issues are like this as well, one-and-dones. But the art in the back for the second issue didn't make me want to pick it up. It kind of looks like Ignition City.
Dude, it's
very good backgrounds, but shitty faces.
It's Chris Burnham.
Who's that?
We've seen Chris Burnham art before.
No, we have not.
Yes, we totally have.
On what?
On stuff.
Not I haven't.
All right, let me see here. Damn it! Now I got to look up again. Where the hell I know this guy from? You suck.
I don't know. Just looking at the pencils, really nice backgrounds, faces. Ugh. And when you're doing comic books, I think faces are the most important feature.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's see. You know what it is? I think we know Chris Burnham from like around comics and shit like that.
I think he's just one of those guys that the podcasters know.
Yeah, that might be it. Oh, here we go. All right. Let's see. Marvel Mystery Comics.
Never read it.
Elephant Man.
Mm-mm.
X-Men Manifest Destiny. Thank you. That's where I know I'm from. And X-Men Divided We Stand. All right. Good. I'm glad I wasn't, you know, crazy. He did a couple of issues of he did the Tabitha story at X-Men Manifest Destiny #1.
I didn't read those.
They were that was actually pretty good.
Okay.
There was more boom boom in her next wave personality.
Gotta get that boom boom boom. Gotta get that boom boom boom.
You do not need to get that boom boom boom. Please, just stop boom boom booming right now, or else I might actually hemorrhage out of my eyes. And you don't want to see that. I won't see that. Yeah, that's great.
Is it gonna be like Ronan throwing up out of his mask? Right, or is it going to be like the eyeball and the giant frog that just kind of pops?
Probably more like the eyeball and the giant frog, now that I think about it.
So, or are you going to be like the vampires on True Blood and just cry blood?
Well, let me applaud you one more time for being able to do 8 issues in a matter of 2 hours. Okay, that's good. Now, our next issue's up. We've got 2 more from these picks.
Got Spider-Man or Clone Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Not Clone Wars. Clone Saga.
Clone Saga. Clone Wars sounds a lot better, man.
Yeah. And something else.
And something else. Let's see what the something else is.
I think it's another indie.
No. No, the Beast of Burden was our indie for that.
Okay. I think it's just Spider-Man.
No, we got at least one more. Actually, wait. Yeah, because Cry for Justice was from the last bunch.
Mm-hmm.
So this one would be... Oh, great. I just went to the Geekspeak site instead of the Comics Timing site. And I spelled Comic Timing wrong. All right, come on, damn it. Come on.
Don't you have your own site bookmarked?
Yes, I do, but I'm in Chrome right now.
What is that? I know what that is, but why are you in Chrome?
Because it takes up less system resources while I'm doing
system
the show.
System resources.
Yeah. All right, here we go. Going down, going down, going down, still going down.
I don't want to know that.
That's what she said. Woo! No, damn you, piece of crap. Son of a... All right, good. Come on, a little more. A little more. So, Comic-Con... okay, maybe it is just that one. Never mind. I'm wrong.
No, because I went to the website to send you that list that we were doing tonight.
Oh, shit. Yeah, okay, no. Yeah, all right. So, that we got that one from that. So, that would be Spider-Man the Clone Saga. Then we've got shoe #5, Daredevil 501, and mm-hmm. Adventure Comics #3.
None of which have come out yet.
None of which have come out yet. However, they will be coming out within the next month. So that we got those, and then we got obviously
Doctor Horrible.
Doctor Horrible, Rebels.
I'm downloading that from iTunes as we speak, or not as we speak, after this.
Oh, really? Good.
So I will be familiar with Dr. Horrible.
That is a good
thing.
Seems
like every time I go to this comic shop that's in the mall, they're playing that.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
It is fun. I think you'll enjoy it.
Okay.
Yeah. It's funny, too. Okay? The actual series. That'll probably...
I figured I should get something that's based on a series. I figured, you know, it was like $6 on iTunes. I was like, all right, I can swing this.
Yeah.
Fine.
And we can talk about Captain America Reborn number 5 of 5, where for some reason Sharon Carter is the constant. She is the constant, the constant, the constant. Marvel Comics is crying for justice. I mean, seriously.
I'm just happy I'm getting my purple ring with Rebels number 10.
And I am very happy I'm getting my purple ring with Rebels number 10 too, because I can wear it to the Pride Parade.
I don't know if it's purple. I'm just saying.
Wait, wasn't it the indigo ring?
I don't know. I don't know which ring it is. I just know there's one that comes with it.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, at this point, Heroes Corner is closed for the month, so we can't talk about that too much. But by the time this comes out, hopefully, we will have our picks for the next month that we can at least pop on here. Giggity, giggity, giggity.
Yeah, just press the center button on your iPod a couple times. It'll be in the show notes. Mm-hmm. And rewind to the beginning, because I'm probably not going to remember to do it in the back.
And this episode of Comic Timing is sponsored by... There we go. Okay, right there.
A punch to the face from Brent.
Ow!
Via the internet.
Dude, I might actually remember to do it. You know? Wouldn't that be nice if I sent that file on to you? Wouldn't that be nice?
That would be nice,
That would be nice. Okay, all right.
Very nice.
Mm-hmm. Very nice. Very, very, very nice. I'm still kind of loopy from working like 17-hour shifts like 2 weeks ago. I'm still not over it. I swear to God, it was sad, man. Dude, I got home at 8 a.m. from work.
And you went in at when?
I went in at let's see. This was for Saturday, so I think at 1. Yeah, I was there from 1 p.m. until 8 a.m.
Wow.
Yeah. Good times, good times, good times. All right, you got any BK's bullets? I mean, you are going to be off after all.
I'm going to be editing this thing.
Oh, you can't take the time out of your busy schedule to come out with a BK's bullet. All right, fine. Do you have anything that you would talk about on the BK's bullets?
I honestly don't know anymore.
No, yeah.
I could do a Superman Batman thing, but I think I'm sending that into Raging Bullets.
That's fine.
So.
Raging
Check
Bullets,
it out.
Raging Bullets misses
that on there.
Yeah, Raging Bullets misses you.
They do. I know they do. Even though they don't say it, they do.
Well, what's good about this is that it'll come out within the next year, so that's good.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Ta-da.
Yeah. And if you listen to Geeks Unite, but you don't, but whatever, I'm just saying.
I don't remember if that's on my iTunes anymore. It's like that, and something else hasn't updated in forever.
Geek Speak Report?
No, not, that's not on there.
All right.
No, that's not coming out.
Thanks for telling me how you really feel. All right. Well, the sporting goods has finally been released, so you can hear
it. It was like the All-Star Batman and Robin of podcasts.
Yeah, are you dense or you retarded? It's the goddamn Geek Tonight. But, yeah, and you can hear our, like, 3 weeks out-of-date report on everything sports, because Raph took forever to come out with it. Whatever.
Yeah. I was listening to that yesterday. I was I bet that's not out yet.
Well, it's out now. How about that? Mm-hmm. And we do actually predict, or at least I predict, that the Patriots will be facing the Giants in the Super Bowl. So let's see how that turns out.
Go Patriots.
Yeah, go Giants. Yeah. All right, I think we're done. So the email address for Comic Timing is comictiming@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out the forums over at comicforums.com, graciously hosted by Comic Geek Speak guys over at comicgeekspeak.com. We are proud members of the Comics Podcast Network over at comicspodcast.com. And we're also members of the League of Comic Book Podcasts over at comicbooknoise.com/league. Bringing up the Comic Podcast Network one more time, there's a brand new section on the CPN site where you can listen to a bunch of podcast promos for a bunch of members of the Comics Podcast Network. We're actually going to start airing some of those promos as of next episode. Probably one per episode. But yeah, if you want to sample some of the CPN shows, that is a great place to do it. Guys like The Fixer's Hideout are on there. We're on there. Comic Book Page is on there. Really, if you want to sample a show before it's out, or before you actually subscribe to it, that's a good place to do it. So head on over to the Comics Podcast Network to go ahead and do that there. And give us your iTunes reviews on iTunes. Graciously appreciated. And Podcast Alley, whatever. So for Mr. Cassina, thank you for sticking with me. And as it strikes midnight on the dot, I'm sure you're happy we're done.
Woohoo!
Woohoo!
And jump for joy.
Jump for joy. Joy, 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 joy. And as always, there's always time for comics. What the fuck, Doom Patrol? I cannot hear the fan.
You can't?
No, I cannot.
Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah. That's actually mighty comfy in my room right now.
That's hot in here. I'm going to turn that. There you go. So I just finished watching Superman, Batman, Public Enemies.
Oh, yeah? How was it?
Good shit.
Nice. It should actually probably be waiting for me at my work tomorrow when I get there.
It was really good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
I heard from some people that it sort of dumbs down the story a little bit.
Well, they take out all of the narration and stuff that they have in the comics. And like the whole murder, Batman's parents' grave shit is gone. So, but pretty much it's exactly the same.
What?
It was just, it was the perfect time too. Like, this is the one time I'm not complaining about the time length, because it was like 67 minutes.
Okay.
And I had enough time to watch it before you called. And I didn't feel that it should have been any longer, because they had basically everything in it.
Nice.
They did a really good job on it.
I had just enough time to eat dinner, watch Heroes, and then call you.
Cool. Yeah. What do you think of Heroes?
You know, this season's a lot better than the last so far.
Really? I'm kind of disinterested in this season.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We'll see. Like, I sort of got tired with last season, like, halfway through, and the first two episodes of this have kind of been decent.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully it'll continue to actually get my interest, as opposed to, you know, shutting me off to the show entirely. Which it might, but who knows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, so far, Peter has not been annoying.
So far. He's actually doing stuff.
Yes, yes, that's why it's not annoying. You know how much I hate it when he just sits there and is like,
something should be happening now, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Don't let shit happen to you, man. Do it. Do it.
Do it.
Do it now.
Okay, so have you read all these?
No, I haven't read any of them. I guess the show's over.
All right, well, you can just ask me questions.
Yeah, I read Beast of Burden on the way home, so I believe that's everything.
Okay, cool. Where should we begin? We should start the episode first, I guess.
Yeah, why not? Why not? Well, I've got here, and you know, I could probably edit this episode since you did the last one.
No, I'm off Friday, and I'm at home because we're still working on the kitchens.
Okay.
Everything's done, but the dishwasher's not working anymore, and something else is going on.
Oh, all right.
So I'm off on Friday anyway.
Okay, cool.
So if you send it to me, I'll have time on Friday to do it, because I don't have anything else planned to do.
Very nice. Okay, good.
Put it out the same day too. So
okay. Do you want to make the picks this month, or because I know that I've picked it the past couple months?
Yeah, I can do that.
All right, sweet. That'll work. And that way, you know, you can pick Azrael, and I won't be sad.
Yeah, that might be what we're picking, because nothing else really looks that great.
I haven't actually had a chance to look through the solicitations yet, but as usual, I'll pick, independent, unless you actually have one that looks good to you.
I've picked out a couple, and you've never wanted them, so
you did pick
a couple good ones, you know, out of these eight books, so like two of them.
Yeah, well, that's good, because there were two independents, weren't there?
Or three. Beast of Burden, Death Clock, and Days Missing.
Yeah, so which one did you not like?
You'll find out.
Oh, fuck. All right. I'm sort of putting my money on it being Beast of Burden, actually, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
Be wrong.
Right. Okay.
Because that is Evan Dorkin, after all, and I know that Evan Dorkin is a storied past. All right. Okay. All
right. So do the intro, and then start the episode. Because I did the intro on the 95, and it sucked. I was in a rush to get it out last night.
Welcome to 95 of Comic Timing. You're now Comic Timing.
Yeah. It's longer than that, I promise.
I know. I heard it. No, you did a decent job. It's not like that one time where you were trying to like mimic everything that I did and you forgot half of it.
I was in a rush to get it out because I was like, oh, I'm so late.
Dude, it's fine. As long as it's out, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, now that we got that done, we officially have two episodes out in the month of September. That was my mission, to at least have two out. We're good. Yeah.
Good.
Also, John Carroll sent me a topic suggestion. Mm-hmm. So, probably going to try and gather a group together for that for maybe, if not next week, then the week after.
Okay.
All right. I'll forward you the topic and everything. And if my voice sounds like crap, it's for some reason I can't stop coughing, so.
All right.
Okay, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
No, I want to know what the fuck Adventure Comics. I mean, we'll talk about that next episode, but goddamn, you can't even do 12 issues?
Yeah.
And Jeff Johns? Jesus Christ.
Well, you see. They had to give Paul Levitt something when he got fired.
And Superboy's not even going to be in the book anymore.
He'll be in Teen Titans.
That's not what Dan DiDio said.
He's going to be in Teen Titans, trust me. He's either going to be in Teen Titans or they're going to give him his own book.
Okay.
Yeah, well, look, I mean, he's Superboy, all right? You brought him back, you got to put him somewhere. Where else are you going to put him, really?
I don't know. I was just really disappointed that, yet again, they put Jeff Johns on a book and they take him off almost right away. At least he did 12 issues on Booster Gold and they had a guy that continued the story. And it's been doing a great job so far, but... Paul Levitt's, I'm sure he's going to be a bit rusty.
Oh, but remember, it's DC Entertainment now. Things have to be better because we put the word entertainment in it, and that worked for Marvel.
I don't know.
Yeah, things are not looking too pretty, especially since there's an, did you see that article from that guy? Well, it was on Bleeding Cool about the major shareholder of Time Warner. It says that he wouldn't be surprised if Warner drops the entire publishing division within the next couple of years. Yeah, then where would that leave DC?
Well, that means Time Magazine goes away too.
Mm-hmm.
As well as some other ones.
Well, I mean, they'll probably...
I don't believe that.
Well, no, they'll probably still exist as their own entity. They just think that Time Warner will no longer exist. It'll just be Warner Brothers and then there'll be Time. You know, back on their own. Sort of like AT&T when they split and then got back together.
I don't know.
You don't know?
I don't know.
I don't know either.
I just know I'll be sad if there's no more Batman.
Yes, that's the best way to describe everything, actually.
No more Batman.
If there'd be no more Batman, I'd be sad.
The world was a dark place from 1994 to 2005. When there was no more Batman movies.
But Mr. Superman not here.
It was a sad, sad place.
Mr. Superman movies not here.
Superman movies have not been good in 25 years.
I'm sorry, I have no money to make Superman movie.
We have no actor, we have no producer, we have no director, we have nothing for Superman to punch, no Superman movie.
Did you see that shitty picture of... I really hope it was Photoshop. That one of Nick Cage in the Superman outfit.
Was it the classic Superman outfit or the crazy one?
The fucked up outfit.
I did not see it. I looked for it. I couldn't find it.
Hold on.
I saw Nick Cage in plenty of the classic Superman outfit.
Let me bring it up. Hold on. Nicholas Cage. Well, the Superman emblem on the one that he's wearing with like all the fake muscles is the Superman blue emblem.
Mm-mm. Send it to me.
Yeah, here we go. Alright, I got it.
I got it.
Look at it right now.
Okay, I'm clicking on it. Nothing's happening. Here we go. Oh my goodness. What?
I know, right?
Oh no!
He looks half stoned. It's the freaking Kingdom Come emblem meets like the blue Superman emblem, and he looks like he's wrapped in a fruit roll-up.
Oh shit!
I'm like totally Superman.
Whoa!
No, dude, I would pay money for Keanu Reeves Superman. Seriously. I would freaking pay $20 to see Keanu Reeves as Superman. Not even in a movie, just dressed up in a Superman outfit.
This is ridiculous. Oh my God.
I know. I mean, a lot of people said this has to be Photoshopped, and yet a lot of other comments were like,
no.
No, dude.
I don't think so.
Have you seen, I mean, the way that Kevin Smith talks about this movie, this shit is real.
I love the little necklace Superman's got on.
Yeah.
It's cute.
Yeah, I know. And he's totally ready to fight a giant spider.
Oh my goodness. At least he'd be punching it, you know? That's all I'm saying. That's all I'm saying.
I'm so happy I never stopped the recording.
Me too.
In the back, people, in the back. Booyah.
Party in the back.
That's what she said. All right. All right, I think we should all go to bed before we're doopy.
Okay, that way I don't have to tell you about Sean and Travis.
Oh, wait. Fuck. Hold on. Let me stop recording. Hold on. Back in your hole issue. There we go. I remember when we first started the show, man, like in the early days, I actually used to write this shit down. Fuck that. Off the top of the head, it worked so much better than that. Yeah, I used to write out a script for the opening. I mean, I still have a couple of the old notepads saved on this computer, too. It's like, welcome to episode 12 of Comic Timing, a comics podcast devoted to the average comic book fan from the average comic book fan. Join in as David Price and a rotating panel of guests discuss whatever comes to mind time after time here in Comic Timing. It's time to discuss comic books. That's right, we're a comic book show. Body blah, blah, blah. And I'm like, okay, what the hell, man? After a while, I was like, screw it, I can do this all the time, man. Easy enough. And that's in the back. All right. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.